Ezra chapter 4, verses 6 to 16. The letter. Let me explain. The Jews have begun to build the temple. They've laid the foundation. But the enemies, their enemies of the exiles, have come in and tried to ingratiate themselves to say that we'll come and help you. But the Jews have stoutly resisted this. No. And so the enemies of the Jews have shown their true colors, and they've tried to oppose them and resist them and stand against them. And now moving to Ezra chapter 4, verses 6 to 16, we see how these enemies of the Jews carry their vendetta on into later reigns, and they take serious steps to oppose and put an end to this work of the restoration of the temple. So Ezra chapter 4, verses 6 to 16, the letter. Now, I remind you that in these brief discourses, thoughts on Ezra and Nehemiah, I am not intending to go into much in the way of critical study and interpretation and explanation of the history and the background and the manuscripts and so on. There are plenty of material, there's plenty of material available for that. But here we meet a case, you see. At the beginning of the reign of Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, they lodged an accusation against the people of Judah. These enemies, they lodged an accusation during the reign of Xerxes, and in the days of Artaxerxes, king of Persia, and so on. So it's going on into later reigns. We're moving on in history now. And the point is, I'm trying to make here, that these enemies of the Jews, these opposers of the temple, don't give up easily. Now, we've seen in verse 5, we've seen that they hired counselors to work against the Jews and frustrate their plans during the reign, the entire reign of Cyrus, and then the reign of Darius, and now it's going on into Xerxes and Artaxerxes. So they're not giving up easily. They're in for the long haul themselves. They're determined about it. They've got the bit between their teeth. And it's a long continued resistance to the Jews. It wasn't over in a day. It wasn't a flash in the pan. It's a heavy criticism. It's a heavy attack. It's a sustained attack. It's thought out. It's clever. As I say, verse 5, they use counselors. And they write the letter to the head people. And this is the letter. Rehum, the commanding officer, and Shimshai, the secretary, and so on. And all these people. And they talk about themselves as being the Samaritans, and they explain when they came into this place under the reign of Ashpenaz and so on. Now, there are critical studies of this and to explain the history of it. But the point for us in this, for me, in this short series of discourses is this. Here is a sustained attack, and let's see what they're going to say. And we get the letter, and a copy of the letter is given from verse 12 to verse 16. The king should know that the Jews who came up to us from you have gone to Jerusalem and are rebuilding that rebellious and wicked city. They are restoring the walls and repairing the foundation. Furthermore, the king should know that if this city is built and its walls are restored, no more taxes, no more tribute, no more duty will be paid, and your income, your royal revenues will suffer, and so on. The king should know that they are doing this. And this is the cause of the purpose that they're going to write to him. Well, they're writing to the king. Now, these Jews came up to us. Well, no, they didn't. They were actually commissioned and sent and given permission to come. It wasn't just a whim or their own purpose. It wasn't a rebellion. The king Cyrus had given this, arranged it, and so on. We've seen that in the earlier chapters. But you see, the calumny here, the lies. Well, there is some truth in the fact of Jerusalem rebelling. They did rebel under Babylon when they were in captivity, but a wicked, rebellious people. This is really getting too close to slander. They say that if you let these people go on, you'll lose your money. You see, they're bringing all these accusations. And look how they're creeping and toadying. We've got the king's best interest at heart. Now, since we're under obligation to the palace and it's not proper for us to see the king dishonored, we are toadying here. We send you this message to inform the king, and they're starting to advise him. You search the you search the records and see, and so on. See, it's the tail wagging the dog. They're heavy criticisms. They're bringing out their big guns here. You go back in the records and you'll see that this city is a rebellious city and we want to destroy it, and you should want to destroy it. That is why this city was destroyed. We inform the king that if this city is built and its walls are restored, you will be left with nothing in Trans-Euphrates. All this land will go away from you. You'll lose your territory. They're calling in the political power. They're calling in the financial power. They're calling in military power. Anything to crush the people of God here. This would be catastrophic if we let it go on. So you can see the heavy weight against the Jews here. And we shall see how this develops. Well, what about us in the days of the New Covenant? What about the last century, 20th century? How about the saints, the churches in Nazi Germany? How about Stalin's Russia? How about Rome during the Dark Ages? How many bled to death? How many were burned at the stake under Rome? How about the Spanish Inquisition? How about the imprisonments and the torture and the torment in China and all sorts of countries? How much is going on even as I speak at this very moment, as you're listening at this very moment? How many saints are suffering? What for? For the cause of Christ. From Acts chapter 3, and it never stopped after that, from Acts chapter 3, persecution broke out against the apostles, against the church, and they were scattered everywhere. And so it's gone on. In fact, you could argue in church history that the times of non-persecution, though they're very rare, that they mark declension in the church. For example, under Constantine, and then again in England, under Charles II and all the appeasements that came in there. It was a time in the 18th century, the early part, of a terrible declension in the churches of Jesus Christ, so much so that in the early 1700s, the Presbyterians didn't even know whether Christ was God. And hyper-Calvinism hit the people. Toleration, apathy, was a worse thing than persecution, but persecution is painful and suffering. And who knows? I speak from the United Kingdom. Who knows whether Islam might come here with Sharia law? So these things are not academic. They have happened in church history. They're happening even as I speak. And those of us in the West, maybe, America and United Kingdom, who are seemingly mostly at ease, who knows? But that day may soon dawn when we shall know this kind of heavy opposition, military, financial, political. And it comes down to outright opposition and the suffering that the saints have to endure. May God make us ready for that day. May we not be growing soft and sappy in our ease. May we be ready for the day when we shall be attacked. Satan attacks even now. May we see that we stand firm for him. May we be ready. Young believer, you understand. As I said to you in a previous discourse, you're in for the long haul, and the path gets steeper all the way. May God give us grace to prepare our minds and hearts for it. May he prepare us, and may we be ready for these dark days. They soon will come, and for some believers, many believers, even at the moment as I speak, these days are still with us. May God bless this solemn thought to us. It is a serious thought. May we weigh it carefully, for Christ's sake. Amen.